Assembly meeting to order at 7:01, and if you'll all rise for the flag vote.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, roll call.
Ms. Becker?
Here.
Ms. Crane?
Here.
Ms. Danner?
Here.
Mr. Dibdahl?
Here.
Mr. Freer?
Here.
Mr. Menzies?
Here.
Mr. Sanford?
Here.
Mr. Stone?
Here.
Mayor Patel?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Are there any, I'll move the to the approval of minutes. Are there any corrections? Hearing none and seeing none, are there any objections to approving the minutes? If I'm not approved. Seeing no objections, the minutes are approved. Manager, do you have any requests for agenda changes?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
And we'll move on to, I don't think we have no public signed up for non-agenda items. Is there anybody in the public here that wishes to speak to us about a non-agenda item? All right. Seeing none, the participation is closed. We'll move forward to the consent agenda. Does anybody in the public wish to pull an item from our consent agenda other than ordinances for introduction? Seeing none, we'll move forward to assembly requests for consent agenda changes. Mr. Stone.
I would move approval of the consent agenda.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, we'll move forward to public hearing. Madam Clerk.
Ordinance 2011-17. An ordinance providing for the levy and collection of temporary 3% area-wide sales tax on the sale price of retail sales, rentals, and services performed within the City and Borough of Juneau. Such tax to be effective on July 1, 2012, intended to be allocated for certain purposes as set forth herein, and calling for an election on whether such sales tax shall be so levied.
Mr. Swope?
If approved, this ordinance would place before the voters in the October 4th, 2011 municipal election a five-year extension of the temporary 3% sales tax. Under the CBJ charter, all sales taxes must be approved by the voters. The temporary 3% sales tax is presently set to expire July 1st, 2012, unless extended by the voters. This ordinance would place the extension question on the next regular election ballot. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Swope. We'll move forward to public comments on this ordinance, ordinance serial number 2011-17. Does anybody in the public wish to give public testimony on this ordinance? Seeing none, we'll move forward to assembly action. Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move ordinance 2011-17 and ask for unanimous consent.
Are there any objections to that? Hearing none or seeing none, we'll move forward to our next ordinance. And that one has been approved. If you didn't get that quick. Okay. Ordinance number 2011-8, Madam Clerk.
An ordinance amending the official zoning map of the City and Borough to change the zoning of U.S. Survey 381 fraction located at the corner of Atlin Drive and Mendenhall Loop Road, currently zoned D10 to Light Commercial LC.
Administration report.
The applicant has requested a zone change from D10 to Light Commercial. The Planning Commission at its April 26, 2011 meeting recommended the Assembly deny rezoning the subject parcel from D10 to Light Commercial. The Lands Committee at its October 1, 2011 meeting reviewed this ordinance and forwarded it to the full assembly and recommended that you consider either keeping it at D10, increasing it to D18, or changing it to light commercial. This is a policy matter. I have no recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. We'll move to public comment. We have 8 people signed up for this this ordinance, so that will give us about 3 minutes per person. There'll be a timer set up here, and I think everybody that's here has been through this before in the past couple months. So if you need any explanation when you get up to the table there, just please state your name and your address where you live, and then give us your public comment. So we'll move forward with Mr. Richard Harris.
My name is Richard Harris of 1110 Reichel Way. Obviously, I'm in favor of this zone change. There's been a lot of talk of conspiracy or something that we're hiding something. There's no conspiracy. We're looking for direction for this thing. We'd like we know we can do 20 apartments, and that's a very basic thing to do with this piece of property. We'd like to have some direction to go forward with something bigger and better. It's going to be the face of this, you know, on the face of this community. This is something you're going to see. Every tourist is going to see this when they go to the glacier. This is something that's right out there. I don't think 20 apartments sitting on the side of the highway is a good thing, not with what the options could be with light commercial. And that's one of the main things that we're after, is to get some direction. We can build 20 apartments. That's easy. Doing nothing is easy. But we'd like to have some options to do something better. And that's basically what the application is about.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Are there any questions for Mr. Harris? Ms. Tanner, go ahead.
Mr. Harris, some of the feedback that we've gotten from members of the community are that they are concerned because they don't really know what your plan is.
There is no plan at all. At this point, we know that we can build 20 apartments, but we don't want to spend money to design 20 apartments if there's something bigger and better that could be done here. Not necessarily bigger, but mostly better. It's going to be the face of the community. You know, I personally would not be proud to build 20 apartments right there. I think it's a waste.
And so my question is, if we as a body grant like commercial zoning, do you know how and when the community will be able to get involved? Maybe this is an unfair question. I should ask staff. But do you know what the process works?
My experience is every project comes back around for a conditional or allowable use permit. And that's generally when these issues come up about access, parking, you know, all these smaller issues come up at that point. We've been listening to the community talk about that. And I personally think those are issues that should be done during a conditional allowable use permit. The zone change just gives us a chance. It gives us some directions and opportunities to do something different. That's all we're looking for now. Then we'll go to a design phase, and we can pick a direction to go. Right now, if you don't approve this tonight, we know what we're building. It's very simple, but we'd like to do something better.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Menzing?
Mr. Harris, in reading the Planning Commission notes, I believe you said, or Murray Walsh said, on behalf of you, that possibly a doctor's office or a lawyer's office or something similar to that could be developed there. Are you planning to market this land in that way, you know, if this is approved?
I wouldn't say we're going to market it that way. We could pick a direction to go that we would like to see, and marketing may be involved, but that was brought up more from a past project that we worked on and working with Dr. Schultz, and we used his building as examples during some of the meetings, and he really could not find that piece that he was looking for a wooded lot for his commercial dental office. He couldn't find it in this town, and so we finally ended up, he's in the center of the valley with a beautiful cabin style look at office that's coming, and he would much prefer something of that sort, but he didn't. He's already too far in the other direction. But I do believe that there's a demand out there for that type of professional buildings and that type of setting and that type of space.
Ms. Dennis?
As far as commercial viability, is a professional office building more profitable than, say, D18?
I don't know if I could say that for certain. I mean, residential housing has its values. You know, doing residential, like I said, is easy. I think the commercial is what would put a better face on the community in that location. It's not boiled down, in my mind, about a dollar value. This is about what would you want to see in your community on the front road. I don't think a 20-unit apartment building with bikes laying around all over and kids playing right next to the street is a good thing. And you're going to end up with a lower dollar rental value when you place something like that right on the highway. Who's going to want to live next to the freeway, you know, without any buffers?
And if I may, my concern is financial, because if we, whatever goes in on that property will increase the traffic at that intersection. That's a serious concern for everyone, including you as the developer, I am certain. But the project has to be viable in order to manage the additional costs for improvements.
If you're wanting additional improvements, it's not going to be very easy to add much to 20 apartments right now with what I paid for that land. It's going to be right there at the bottom line.
Thank you.
Mr. Dibdahl or Mayor, any questions?
I have not. No questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Harris. We'll move forward to our next public, and that's Mr. Ron Sedgwick.
Okay, I'm Ron Sedgwick. I live at 9010 Outland. I'm two lots down from the projected change. I know what the best use of the property is, in my mind, is preserving that old growth timber, putting some nice development in there that like Professional Plaza over on Old Glacier Highway, utilizing the trees and not a big apartment building. But I don't know how you get there from here. I don't know which section of the zoning law permits that kind of a development, but Professional Plaza kind of thing, preserving the trees and some sort of a good forested buffer for both the neighborhood and Mrs. Wild, who lives right on that property line and has for 40-plus years, as I have. So how you get there from here, I'm not sure. And so that to just lay it out and open it up completely is not the way I would like to see it go. I would like to see a plan on the table that meets the criteria that feels good for the neighborhood. Before you just jump into something. But I'm not sure what fits in which zoning proposition.
Thank you, Mr. Sedgwick. Any questions? Thank you. We'll go on to our next presenter, Mr. Chuck Cohen.
Hi.
Good evening.
Thank you, Mr. Sanford. I am curious to know to what materials is the assembly had made available to them? Do you have all the testimony that was presented to the original planning commission? Do you have their minutes? Do you have all the testimony they presented to the lands committee and their minutes and things of this sort to review before you make your decision, as well as the original staff recommendation recommending that this request be denied?
I know for certain that all of us on the lands committee got all of that stuff. Did the rest of these other members also?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So I just don't want to repeat things that are already available to you.
We've got a full documentation of the process.
Well, let me focus on the high points then. I'm here representing the Kotzoff Acres Manufactured Home Community, which is directly across the way. We're here to object to the proposed zoning request, which is and for the reasons we'd like to suggest to you, it should be denied. First, staff recommended opposing it. Now, you hire professional planners to give you recommendation or advice on how to plan the city. Deference ought to be given to their advice to some degree, unless there is a good reason to oppose it. Second, your planning commission, which is a group composed of volunteers that you appointed, recommended that this be denied. Deference should be given to their views as well. If you wish to get public servants to serve you as your appointed representatives to deal with specific issues, you ought not to just take it on de novo and to disregard everything they have to recommend. You appointed them. You can balance that board any way you like. They presumably do your work in a more detailed way. It's not clear to me, although I did review the code briefly, and I do understand whether people would might see ambiguity in it. It appears to me that matters of this sort should come as an appellate matter to this council, not as a matter of an ordinance introduced. You sort of do everything over that has already been done before. So that's just a general procedural suggestion, possibly not related to this item, but ought to be considered in the future, certainly. Second of all, we'd like to point out that a couple of things about the request. First of all, I don't think it's the same to suggest that just because you have an opportunity to review something with a conditional or permitted use permit, it's the same as a zoning change. I think you have to recognize that it's important that zoning has an importance beyond the individual landowner that comes before you here. Zoning is intended to create a predictable real estate market and a harmonious development to protect land values and expectations of existing landowners, as well as a particular developer. This parcel was recently acquired an applicant in a public auction from the federal government. The parcel was in place at the time with D10 zoning. May I continue? Thank you.
Wrap it up here.
Okay. Every developer knows that light commercial land is worth more than residential land. And so buying land at auction, getting it upzoned, either by density or otherwise, and then putting it back on the market is a classic way to make money in the real estate business. The only problem is there is no free lunch. The money that that developer makes is at the burden of adjacent landowners that have to live with a different set of problems than they bought into in the first place. The reason why we have zoning is to give predictability in the marketplace to everyone across the board and in fairness.
Thank you, Mr. Cole.
Thank you very much.
Are there any questions for Mr. Cole? Ms. Stanner.
Mr. Cohen, why is it that, as representative of COTSOF, that you're interested in this in particular?
Well, because what happens with zoning, and, you know, we were, some years ago, a developer around town came to us and said, you know, we need to, you ought to consider helping support us in the comprehensive plan process by making the mobile home park like commercial, because it would be worth a lot more to you there, and you could develop it, and you're just holding on to that land so you can make more money out of it later. And I said, well, what am I going to do with the 85 families that live there and their houses and plus the land that's around it? Now, this is it. What happens with zoning is that zoning creates a predictable way to design a community. And if the developer in this particular instance has a particular project in mind and it's planned out and you can take a look at it, they can work with a PUD process, they can work with the upzoning at that time. When you already have something in front of you to look at and you're not faced with land speculation as opposed to a fixed product. People have said something in a professional office building with a nice green buffer and so forth and so on. You look at that before you upzone because there are other ways to get there. It's not just 20 apartments. It's 20 apartments per acre. This is a 2.6-acre parcel. And if there are developable obstructions, as, for example, in our parcel across the street, all you have to do to solve that problem is work into a PUD process or work into some other way to move the density around the lot to get the benefit of the lake. You know, this city council has spent years wrestling with the problem of affordable housing in this community. This is a prime piece of affordable housing land. It is close to the municipal transportation system. It is directly adjacent to shopping, which is walkable. It's walkable to schools. And quite frankly, kids don't run. You know, we have a mobile home park with 85 families. We have a green belt buffer there that's 15 feet wide. You can't even tell there's any mobile homes there when you drive by.
Mr. Mayor, I'm sorry. You're arguing for this project, not against it.
No, I'm not. I'm not arguing for or against the project. I'm against the zoning change.
Okay.
Because I think the zoning change at this time is not a good idea.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Cole? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, we'll move forward to our next public, Mr. Eddie Quinto. Hi, Ed.
Good morning. My name is Ed Quinto. I live at 2532 Tesla Street.
Sorry.
Time's up.
After 32 years? Thank you. I'm here to object against the light commercial zoning and keep the area here on D10. Primarily on the safety issue. There's a lot of traffic, and if he wants to put a light commercial there, the traffic there, there's only one way in and out of that Atlin Street. It's surrounded by private property on all three sides, and then you have the Mendenhall Mall area. We've lived there since 1999, and living there, I've seen a lot of near misses. I've been involved in a lot of near misses, and I've also seen a lot of accidents there with my profession. It backs up traffic all the way down Loop Road in the mornings, and during the evenings, it backs up traffic all the way to the highway. And it's even hard to get into trying to do a short change in the lane there. having a light commercial in that area also will have a decrease in my home value. When we bought the property there, we anticipated just having a D10, having a family home there. We didn't anticipate having a business there. I mean, I don't think anybody would like to have a business on Meander Street or maybe Pioneer Avenue. So please think about that. I think that the assembly should follow the recommendations of the Planning Commission and also the your own staff, community development, against the approval of light commercial. Keep it as D10.
Thank you, Mr. Pinto. Are there any questions for Mr. Pinto? Ms. Banner?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Quinto, that intersection is terrible. I absolutely agree, and we need to get it fixed.
Yes.
If it's D10 and Mr. Harris puts in 20 new apartments, that's going to create a big problem. That's still going to require an upgrade to that intersection. If you had to choose as a neighbor between D10 with minimal, I don't know what the requirements are for upgrades, so let's say that only minimal upgrades are required with D10, or D18 with major upgrades, or a professional building with major upgrades, which of those three would you like?
I would stick with D10, but if you think about a professional building, if you go to a doctor's office, how long is your appointment? 10 minutes. So one doctor in 1 hour gets six people, right? You have multiple doctors there. How many people do you have running in and out of that office complex? That's my thought.
And my question is really whether or not the having less traffic in the evenings and the weekends is a valuable thing for you, because I think that's the advantage to the light commercial or professional office building.
I think that having residential, it's set. And to me, I think residential would be more advantageous for our neighborhood.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions for Mr. Quinto? Thank you. Mr. Quinto? Andrea? Quinto.
My name's Andrea Quinto. I live with my husband at 2532 Tesla Street, along with my grandchildren. I operate a home daycare out of my home as well. So in answer to your question that you asked my husband, during the day, my children are outside playing on our street. They're allowed to play ball. They ride their bikes, their scooters, their go-karts. I just got my granddaughter a bike. She's going to be out there with her wagon or her bike. Now, which one of you is going to want to purchase a home, my home, Mrs. Wild's home, with commercial property right next door? And when you think about it, think, go through your head and try and think. Unless you live downtown Juneau, where are you going to find a hotel, a convenience store, a doctor's office right next to a residential home? And would you purchase that home? That's how you're going to change our neighborhood. We have 17 homes. We all know each other. We have streets. I'm helping to keep an eye on a grandmother living right across the street. All the neighborhoods watch out for my dogs who constantly get out, and as well as my children. Now, what he's asking to do is change dramatically our neighborhood. And yes, apartments may change it, but I thought it was supposed to be single-family homes. Now, either which way, who would let their children outside right next to a commercial building with all that extra traffic? I live very close to Mrs. Wild's, only two doors down. I'm right on the corner of Teslin Street and Atlin. you're changing our neighborhood dramatically, and I couldn't allow my children outside anymore to be playing on my street. And yeah, what we're asking for you is to minimize the damage to the neighborhood as much as possible so that our children can play out in the street, on our street, safely, and still have a neighborhood, not downtown, because that's not what we purchased. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Mrs. Quintle. Any questions for Mrs. Quintle? Seeing none, thank you very much. Mr. Tim Bazaar? Tim with a B and then whatever else it is.
Yeah. it is.
But you'll correct me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This will make it a little easier to call.
I wasn't even close, was I? Anderson.
You can share.
My name is Tim Banaszak. I live at 2516 Teslin. And I just handed the letter out. And so basically, my concerns are as a resident of the neighborhood. And I'll just hit a couple of the high points since we just have a couple of minutes here. So my request to the assembly is that you deny the spot zone request for this piece of property to light commercial and leave it as residential D10. And if you look through this letter, just to highlight a couple of the bullets that are in there, the first one talks about the plan for that whole area that you've heard reference to tonight. And there's a residential zoning quote that I liked, and it was provided by the city attorney for the manager for presentation to the assembly. And the quote, I think, is meaningful. The purpose of zoning is to provide a healthy and safe and pleasant environment for residential living protected from incompatible and disruptive activities. And I think that's what we're asking for here as a neighborhood. We just want the area to be compatible. And I appreciate the developer's comments. I don't think he's trying to come in and make it miserable. But we live there. We're there every day, and so this is at least what I'm asking for. Just to hit, if you see in that letter, I'll just touch on the highlighted points. I think there was 5 points in here or so. One, as you've heard, the intersection is very dangerous there. The issue, and I've talked to DOT about this, is it's so close to the main highway that to slow that intersection down at all takes that entire valley traffic and begins to back it up even more than it is now. So you could do something they call a protected intersection. So when a pedestrian hits the button, the pedestrian goes, but no other traffic's allowed to go. And the way that intersection's laid out, the cars can go, pedestrians can go, and oncoming traffic and pedestrians all have to yield to each other. And so you end up kind of darting around and trying to, as best you can, sometimes you leap out of the way. And, you know, these are not reckless, careless drivers. This is just the nature of that intersection. And, you know, Ms. Danner, you asked the question earlier about what would the impact be residential versus commercial. It's a problem in there, and that the intersection does need some attention of some type. If you try to do a crosswalk or an overpass, that gets into easements and other issues. So, and I know the time's ticking by, so I'm going to hit these couple other areas. The second bullet point on that first page, again, it's a residential neighborhood. You've heard that earlier today, and we'd like to keep it that way. The next point, you heard the value of the property was purchased by public auction, zoned at a certain rate. The value is there to develop it residential. And then the final point is that it's contrary to the 2008 comprehensive plan, again, for this area, medium-density residential. So I would urge and ask the Assembly to consider our wishes in the neighborhood and leave it zoned residential D10. Thank you,
Mr. Banasek.
Very much.
Appreciate it. Any questions for Mr. Banasek? Seeing none, thank you very much. We'll move on to Larry Herlock. Mr. Herlock.
My name is Larry Herlock. I live at 2858 Hall Loop Road, but actually I use Atlin Drive all the time, moving across the Smith adjacent Smith property to get to it. We all know that there's difficulties there at that intersection. I'm really here to say that anything that minimizes the amount of traffic into that intersection is what I'm most in favor of. The at a prior meeting, there was some discussion about a second outlet other than Atlin. The fact is, and I think you're probably all familiar with by now, that would have to go past our house onto Herlock subdivision. That's the only other way out, even in the future. I think there was also a discussion that can't be done until the Smiths subdivide that piece of property. In other words, you have an island of the pond, of which I think my family owns 50% of, to the north. You've got Egan Expressway to the south, and, of course, you have the loop in Atlin. So you're on an island. You're going into an island one way and out, in and out. Most all commercial-type enterprises have a way in and a way out, or two ways in and two ways out. You've got only one, and you're only ever going to have one for the foreseeable future. You've got to keep the amount of traffic, you know, down. The other thing that I'm very curious about is that the owner is so dismissive of the idea of putting 10 units per acre on that property. When, you know, it begs the question, why'd you buy it? The other thing is that, well, wait a minute, this pond that we're talking about, fondly known to myself as Herlock Pond, it's, you know, you can't cut the timber around it. It's a beautiful pond. You people put a lot of money into making the upstream pond on that side of the road a much nicer pond so that there wasn't all that upwelling of iron and so forth, and you've actually made it biologically a much better pond. He's going to have the ability to build 10 units per acre on an absolutely beautiful pond. Where, you know, what's the damage to the developer in that? And I'll leave you with that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Herlock. Any questions for Mr. Herlock? None. Thank you very much. And our last public participant tonight is Mr. Murray.
Thank you. I'm Murray Walsh. I'm here on behalf of the applicant, Mr. Harris. And I know that these kind of proceedings are not a lot of fun for anybody, and I know we'll all be glad when it's over. But there are some basics about this property that I need to remind you of. 40% of it is unusable because of CBJ-imposed setbacks for the pond that you just heard about, and 50 feet of land next to the pond, which is also unusable. The parcel is on a busy street. Loop Road is certainly no quiet little arterial. The property used to be used for commercial and even industrial purposes by the Forest Service. There is only one residential property that is adjacent to this property, and that property can be protected by the kind of buffering that we would expect to be required of us in light commercial zoning application for any of the light commercial uses that have been mentioned. In the staff report that was provided by the Community Development Department, you see that the traffic that would be anticipated from multifamily residential development is not dissimilar from that which would be expected from light commercial use. So it's not a matter of traffic or no traffic. It's a matter of commercial traffic or residential traffic. A given residential unit will generate 6 or 7 or 8 trips to or from the house or the apartment each day. Very, Juneau is no different than the rest of the lower 48 in its tendency to use the automobile. Mention was made about the trees that are on the property. They are unique in the valley. They are apparently wind-hardened and steadfast. The ability to preserve them is enhanced if we can concentrate the use around them rather than having to remove them to make space for less dense uses. So the best way to preserve those trees is to give us the maximum number of options to develop the property. That's what light commercial gives you. Maintaining home values was mentioned. The staff didn't find that there would be any diminution of nearby residences because of light commercial zoning. That has certainly been the case in Juneau's history. Changes to the neighborhood. We would suggest that we can do positive things for the neighborhood. The immediate sides of Atland Street could be improved. There are no sidewalks on them now, no bike lanes, no protection for anybody. So there's a lot of improvements that could be made. Again, the more of those we can afford to do more of that kind of thing with more options. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. Are there any questions for Mr. Walsh? Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There was a comment made from some other testifier that it would be better if you would tell us what you were going to do with it. Is that a typical process for a builder to tell the Planning Commission or the Assembly or anyone else what they're going to do before they purchase land and get approval to build on it? Is it something that we should logically expect you to tell us that what you're going to do on it before we approve or disapprove this?
I will answer that question, but if you're not in any way dissatisfied, then I would ask you to ask the planning director that question too. In Juneau, you cannot upzone on a case-by-case basis. There are other communities that have more elaborate forms of zoning to where you can design a development and pick out which zone best fits it and then approach the city to get that zone. Can't do it here. What you do here is more classic form of zoning where you settle on the zoning, but what Juneau has is a more elaborate review of projects once they have been designed and submitted. Juneau has extensive powers to ask for exactions, it's called, changes, buffers, limits to hours of operation, all kinds of things that a lot of cities with less complicated zoning cannot do or do not do. So, if the assertion about upzoning at the time of a specific project, you cannot do that under the current code. If I'm copying your question right.
Other questions? Ms. Denner, you had your hand up? Or no?
I did, but I think my question is more or less answered.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. We'll move on to assembly discussion or action on this item. Ms. Denner?
I would move ordinance 2011-18 for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Ms. Banner. Go ahead.
Okay. I actually have questions for staff, so could either Ms. McEwen or Mr. Pernula come forward?
Can people speak into the mic, please?
Lean forward.
Everybody. Sorry, Johan.
Go ahead, Ms. Banner.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Pernula, thank you. I have questions about the process. First, I agree with Mr. Cohen. I don't like it that when the assembly has to weigh in on a situation where the Planning Commission has already made a call. So perhaps you can clarify for us how this process works.
I probably would have answered the question similar to the way Mr. Walsh did, that the normal process is rezoning to a zone, and then as something's proposed, if it's at a larger scale, they have to come in for a conditional use permit or whatever. We haven't really gotten into conditioning or contracting a zoning based on a specific use. I have worked in communities where we did it. It's a little bit cumbersome. It can be done in some states. I don't know that we've really done it here. We haven't done it here since I've been here.
Ms. Danner, follow up.
So typically, if we are going to upzone, if an owner of property qualifies and requests zoning changes, then it's normal for that zoning to come first before the Planning Commission, then before the Assembly, regardless of what the Planning Commission says?
Okay, I guess you're talking about the process of whether or not a rezoning were a denial recommendation, whether or not it normally goes to the Assembly?
Correct.
I had the same question also, and I think a month or so ago I asked Mr. Hartle what the code says, because it's not exactly clear. I can read it for you real quick. What it says is procedure. This is 4975-130. It says a rezoning shall follow the procedure for a major development permit except for the following. One, the commission decision for approval shall constitute only a recommendation to the Assembly. It does not say what a recommendation for denial is. So my question to Mr. Hartle was, if it's a denial recommendation, would an applicant have to appeal it to the Assembly, or would they be able to take that same request to the Assembly with a denial recommendation? And he said the latter, that it would still go to the Assembly, but with that ordinance, but with a negative recommendation.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Perdula, and maybe this is a question better directed at the attorney, but generally speaking, would I be correct in assuming that a zoning change is a legislative, not a quasi-judicial act? In other words, to make a zone change is legislative and therefore exclusively in the province of the Assembly, whereas the normal course in terms of permitting, we sit in a different role, having delegated, or the charter having delegated functions of initial determinations to the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Ms. Stevens?
Through the chair. I would agree with the mayor's analysis there, and I might also direct your attention to, there is another provision as well as what Mr. Pernula cited in 4975-130. There's also under the duties of the Planning Commission in 4910-170, it says the commission shall make recommendations to the Assembly on all proposed amendments to this title, zonings and rezonings, indicating compliance with the provisions of this title and the comprehensive plan. So I think taken together, whether it's a recommendation for a rezone or against it, I think that it does come before the Assembly, not as an appeal, but as it is coming today.
Any other questions, comments?
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Manzi.
Mr. Pernula, if we deny this application, as you did, is there anything to hold the applicant back that sometime in the future he comes before the Planning Commission again, saying he found a light commercial use and asked to be or make a new application? Is there anything that would preclude him from doing that?
Go ahead, Mr. Pernula.
Okay, what it says here, rezoning requests which are substantially the same as a rezoning request rejected within the previous 12 months shall not be considered. So after a 12-month period, he could request a similar rezoning. Okay. Or perhaps if it's something less intensive, certain kinds of office uses or hospital or medical clinics, you could have in one of the other zones that, like D15 or D18.
Any other questions, comments? Mr. Freer.
Mr. Pernula, it wasn't clear to me why this item was referred to the Lands Committee, and possibly just because I wasn't sitting on this body at the time these actions took place, but why this item was referred to the Lands Committee as an interim stop, I guess, on the way to the Assembly. That, in my knowledge, that's not typical procedure.
That occurred, I believe, at the time the ordinance was introduced and the Assembly referred it to the Lands Committee. Okay.
And just to make it clear, I think that the Lands Committee wished to hear it at the Lands Committee and requested that. I don't, and then we said yes, that it could go to the Lands Committee. But
okay.
So any other questions, comments? Ms. Becker?
Thank you. I would like to ask the attorney this question.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure that I know exactly. We've got an ordinance here that says to light commercial. Do we have, if we were to choose to go to D18, do we have to vote the light commercial down and then make another motion to go to light commercial? I mean to D18.
Well, let me just say that in terms of going back to the notice requirements, I think you could decide to do D18 tonight and modify this. My Robert's rules are rusty, so I'm I shouldn't say rusty, they're almost non-existent. In terms of procedurally, whether you would vote this down or make a motion to amend it for D18, I'm seeing the chair say a motion to amend would be the appropriate way, and
yeah.
The mayor I think would address that too, because I think he is more the expert.
Right. That's
Mr. Chairman, your call, as I understand it, to amend would be correct, and because D18 is a lesser intensive zone than light commercial, I don't think there's a notice issue.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Any other comments, questions? Mr. Menzie?
One last question. The applicant's land is 2.6 acres. He and his consultant have said that they're going to lose 40%, or there's correspondence that it would only be 1.6 acres of usable or 1.4 acres of usable, but he is still allowed to build at D10 or 26 units on that 2.6 units.
Mr.
The answer to that is yes. We would take the full amount of land and divide it by 10 units per acres to calculate the total number, but they would have to be confined to those areas that are not restricted by setbacks.
So, in other words, it would be actually a development of 26 units on 1.6 acres would be much denser than on 2.6 acres.
Correct.
Yeah. Ms. Danner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pernula, I'm curious to explore why it is that the Planning Commission recommended against this particular change. My preference is to defer to the Planning Commission's recommendation. They are the experts. So can we talk about that a little bit? The first two provisions for requesting a zoning change, 2 acres or greater, and the one-year rule, both were not a problem. So it was only the third, and that is that this particular project didn't conform with the
medium residential.
No, medium density, MDR, in the comprehensive plan. Now, that's what I'm interested in. It seems that the MDR allows for 5 to 20 units per acre. Now, right now, this neighborhood is zoned D10, but the I don't know what the plan is. The comprehensive plan doesn't seem to make that clear. So can you explain to me, if we had the older zoning says it's D10, and then we come in with a comprehensive plan that says that this area is really MDR, meaning it could go 5 to 20 plus perhaps some light commercial. So what did the Planning Commission have in mind? What did development have in mind for that?
Well, the comprehensive plan is not necessarily a law that restricts what we issue permits or don't issue permits on. It's a general, it's a guideline of saying this is what we want, 5 to 20 units per acre. So the actual law, the zones that can be applied to it, are those zones that allow those densities within that range. It could be D10, could be D15, it could be D18. Any of those zones specifically could be applied by the assembly to those parcels. And the larger density that show, if you have a lower density in the zoning map, you have a higher density in the comprehensive plan map, they would be able to apply for a rezone for it, certainly, but you still would have the ability to keep it at a lower density through the zoning ordinance.
But is there a plan? I mean, is there a
that is the plan, that this area would be MDR, meaning it would be a residential zone within those boundaries.
Mr. Chair, you understand my confusion with this particular issue? Will we as the assembly continually make decisions for one property owner, one property at a time, as to how we will develop our community going into the future? Or will we, or does the comprehensive plan give us guidance, or do we need to ask for more guidance from the Planning Commission and community development so that we don't have to make these decisions one at a time?
I don't want to get off track here, but if you look at how many actions the Planning Commission takes and how many come to us for the final decision, it's very few in number compared to what they actually take. So, you know, we're not going to hear every single one. There's going to be a case-by-case basis, and if it's justified when it comes to us, we have to make that decision on our own and then as a group whether or not we want to go that route for that area. So, Ms. Crane, go ahead.
My concern here has been voiced somewhat by the others, and that is I don't believe that the comprehensive plan is a document written in stone that cannot be changed. And I do believe that we're going to have to look at some issues on a case-by-case basis. But my problem is, and it's not the developer's fault here. We're not requiring it. It seems to me that the plan is developed in public with public input and in the light of day. If we're going to make a change to that plan, then I think that we ought to have a reason to be making a change, and that means that we should know what is going to be developed before we just give an overall blessing to light commercial. Now, I understand that we don't require that, correct? We don't require a plan before we will allow it to go to light commercial. But to me, that makes more sense than just saying, okay, you can do anything you want because it's light commercial. So I am going to vote to keep the D10, and I also would not want to go to D18 because that has not been through the Planning Commission, specifically at D18, and the neighborhood has not had an opportunity to voice their concerns or their comments about that either. And I think by doing that, we'd be circumventing the process. So.
Thank you, Ms. Green. Mr. Stone.
I'm just a little confused. Mr. Pannulla, if we were to say okay to light commercial, does that mean it's a done deal then? I mean, would it not come back to us?
Mr. Pannulla.
It probably would not come back to you. It would be any use that's permitted as a use of right in the light commercial zone would be permitted, and those that require conditional use permits would go to the Planning Commission.
So it would have to go through the Planning Commission's bivouac. Right. Ms. Danner?
But which kinds of light commercial would require conditional use? If it's once we've zoned it light commercial, does that just throw open the doors to any kind of development at all that is light?
No. You'd have to go through the entire table of permissible uses and look at all the different potential uses to see the process. But in general, some of the some of the retail uses would require a conditional use permit if it's over, for example, 10,000 square feet. Any retail use beyond that would require a conditional use permit.
Mr. Fair.
Do you know offhand, Mr. Pernilla, what the level of service is at this intersection?
I don't recall.
Thank you. The purpose of my question is that the code makes a reference to a level of service D for traffic at intersections, and there's been some testimony about traffic already being an issue at this intersection, and so that seems that almost no matter what happens here in the way of development, there would be some issues perhaps surrounding that level of service at that intersection. And there are prohibitions against lowering that level of service as well. That's the purpose of my question.
I think you're right, Mr. Freer, and I think Mr. Petula would tell you that if a project is presented to the Planning Commission and to staff, then they're going to look at whatever project that is under the conditional use permit and ask for
the proper mitigations.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they'll ask for a traffic study at that intersection to make sure what it is and what it is going to go to with a proposed project. We just don't have a proposed project right now, and so we're ahead of the game here with this part of it, and that's some of the confusion that we're all trying to deal with. Mr. Menzies?
Mr. Mayor, the Planning Commission said if it chooses to recommend rezoning this lot to light commercial, that the traffic analysis or traffic impact analysis be done. They didn't recommend it to go to light commercial, so no traffic analysis was done.
Ms. Danner?
And so if, Mr. Pernilla, if regardless, it seems like if there are less than 20 residences in that neighborhood now, and if it remains D10 until 26 residences are added, it seems that whether it's D10, D18, or light commercial, that there's going to be a need for, what did you say?
Traffic
impact study. So why is it the Planning Commission only asked for that for light commercial? Shouldn't we have that regardless?
Mr. Pernilla.
A few years ago, we amended the traffic impact analysis requirement of the code. I'd have to read through it and take a look at what triggers it. But at certain levels, whether or not it goes, a conditional use permit goes to the assembly, if the traffic is potentially above a certain level, they'll have to do a traffic impact analysis, and they would have to propose mitigation if it lowers the rating of the intersection below a certain level. I could go over that, but it's kind of a complicated provision of the code.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Dibdahl, go ahead.
Yeah. Can the assembly now taking action condition the approval and say condition it for the traffic study?
Mr. Pernilla?
I didn't quite hear it very well. What was the question?
Can the assembly condition the ordinance, and we as the assembly condition the ordinance like the Planning Commission does?
I would have to look at it in some detail, but we have conditioned quite a few rezonings around town. I remember a major rezone on Valley Boulevard would not be effective until a sidewalk went in, and there were several others similar to that.
But was that the Planning Commission or the Assembly?
That was the Planning Commission, followed through by the Assembly in the actual rezoning. I do have the traffic impact analysis requirements here if you want me to read it real quick.
Do you want to hear that, Ms. Denny? Yes, please, Mr. Pernilla.
Okay, a traffic impact analysis shall be required as follows. A development projected to generate 500 or more average daily trips shall be required to have a traffic impact analysis. A development projected to generate fewer than 250 trips shall be required to have a traffic impact analysis. Shall not be required, excuse me. Development between 250 and 500 shall be required to have a traffic impact analysis if the community development director determines that an analysis is necessary based on the type of the development, its location, the likelihood of future expansion, and other factors found relevant to the, by the director. Just to give you an example of how much traffic the trips would be generated, one single-family dwelling usually can generate about 10 trips per day. That means you're going, if you go to work and come home, that's two trips. But an average, a typical single-family dwelling generates about 10 per day. So 500 would be about generated by about 50 single-family dwellings. A multiple-family dwelling usually generates fewer trips per day per unit than a single-family dwelling does. And so the 250 trips per day would be about 25 single-family dwellings.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Mr. Dibdahl.
Yeah, in spite of those numbers, it still doesn't answer my question right now, regardless of what the traffic would generate, regardless of what plan would be put forth, were this approved as light commercial, can we condition... for example, and require that study as part of that condition of approval for to light commercial? That's my question.
Mr. Pernilla.
I believe you probably could. I should, I'd like to confer with the city attorney as to whether or not we, you know, it would be legal. I think the point is that if we have these prescriptive requirements right in code right now, that trips the requirement for the study, and in turn may require mitigation. The requirement for a mitigation still would probably be at the same level, regardless of whether or not the impact analysis is required. You know, if you're going to lower the threshold at which the study is required, do you also, just as important, you may want to lower the threshold when mitigation is required. I see my point.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Mr. Dibdahl.
But as a number of people testified, this particular intersection may be unique, and so I would not expect that if we conditioned it or were able to legally, that it would necessarily apply to every situation.
They're conferring right now with Ms. Stevens. Go ahead.
I do have problems with that. Part of it is that because the developer is not required to even have the project to seek a rezone, my understanding from talking to staff today was you can't do a traffic analysis without a project proposed. So I don't think you can – my understanding is you wouldn't be able to do a traffic analysis without a specific project proposed because our code doesn't require the developer to have a project when he seeks a rezone. Just my gut is, without research, is I don't believe we could – do a conditional ordinance like that.
Mr. Pernilla, go ahead.
I think Mr. Dibdahl's question would be, if it's rezoned to light commercial, and if you, for this particular rezone, said any commercial use of the property would require a traffic impact analysis, even though the code set has this higher level to require the analysis, could we require it for any commercial use that's proposed in the future as a condition of the rezone?
Ms. Stevens?
That sounds more plausible, and I'm not.
Mr. Mayor?
Go ahead, Mr. Menzies.
I could be reading this wrong, but on page 6 of your staff report, I think ABT is average vehicle traffic. And anything above a D15 is going to require a traffic impact analysis, the way I look at this, because you have your traffic count there, D10, 151, D15, 234, D18, 281, which is above the 250 that you talked about, and LC, interestingly enough, is equal to D18, 281. So I think anything above D15 will automatically generate a traffic impact analysis.
So you think it would not be necessary, it would be redundant? Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's what Mr. Menzies was trying to point out to us.
That's what Thank I you, Bill. If I'm reading it right.
Mr. Pernilla, do you think that's accurate?
That's probably true. So if they propose a smaller development, even a commercial smaller development below that, it wouldn't kick it in, but if it was above that level, yes.
Ms. Danner.
And how does it work when a development goes in and puts more burden on the intersection? Is the developer who's the last one to develop, is that the one who must pay to improve the intersection, or does somehow is this a DOT expense, or how does that work?
Well, if you've got an intersection that's maxed out already, something's got to kick it in. And let me see.
And of course, that's a DOT highway, so.
Here's what it says, traffic impact mitigation. Except as provided in 49.43.40, an applicant shall make improvements to a roadway or intersection to achieve or maintain an acceptable level of service if a roadway or intersection has level of service D without traffic generated by the development and will drop below level service D with traffic generated by the development at the opening date of the development or full build out, or if a roadway has a level of service D without traffic generated by the development at the opening date of the development, and so on. So it would be required of the developer.
Mr. Menzies?
That's all I was going to say. In the past, DOT historically has required the developer to pay for the improvement.
Thank you.
And I think that sometimes, if it's a city and borough street, of course, then we get involved in parts of it also, and some of the upgrade is paid by our CIP program, and some of it's by a developer, depending on how much beyond is affected, for sure. Okay, Ms. Danner.
A question about density. If this motion were to fail and the property were to remain D10, could the developer then come to the Planning Commission and CDD with a proposal for D18 or for light commercial that would not otherwise qualify, which would allow for all of the mitigation to happen at that point in time, to have a bigger project, or no?
Go ahead, Mr. Pernilla.
They could apply for D15 or D18. They could not apply for LC for 1 year.
Clarification. I'm not asking for them to come back to ask for rezoning again. I'm asking whether they can come forward with a project that happens to be in excess of their zoning. I know if we grant D18, they will be able to put in D18 on part of the property and a professional building up to a certain square footage in D18. My question is, do we need to somehow clairvoyantly determine what the developer is going to find a market for and decide that right now? Or can we leave it as it is, D10, have them find their market, their product, and come back with a project where we will know what the impacts on the intersection is? Is there a way to turn this cart and horse back around?
Just to make it perfectly clear, they are not going to come back to this body.
No.
They will go to the Planning Commission, CDD.
Correct.
That's where it will go if it comes back anyway. Mr. Pinula.
So I guess your recommendation would be that if you're going to change it, you want to see a project first. And
so we can
look at the impacts of that specific project before we actually approve the rezoning.
The second half of your statement is exactly what I'm asking. Is I'm not making a recommendation. I'm asking if we left it D10, does that limit the builder precisely to D10?
Yes.
That I should have said that in the first place. All right. Then I have a comment.
Ms. Danner, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I ran for assembly, not planning commission. I didn't think I was going to be ever put in a position where I'd have to determine what our community was going to look like in terms of a plan. So what I've learned in the last 2 years serving on the assembly where issues like this come before us is all I have to work with. I remember a zoning request near the cemetery where one of the things that the Planning Commission talked about or CDD talked about in terms of density was that you might have more density and more commercial activity along the main thoroughfare. This was sort of akin to our old hometowns. It seems to me if the neighborhood, the back half of an MDR neighborhood is $500,000 homes, nobody's going to really want a $500,000 home right there on Mendenhall, whatever the name of that road is.
Mendenhall Loop Road.
Yes. Nobody's going to want a $500,000 house that close to the traffic. And it makes sense to me that we would have denser, more densely developed property closer to the main street, or even light commercial. Whatever the developer does with this property, it is their property, whatever they do with it, whether we zone it D10 or change it to D18 or change it to light commercial, there is going to be a lot of traffic at this intersection, and that's going to have to be dealt with. So it's really important that we make that clear somehow, and whether we have to make it clear to the CDD and planning department through sort of reinforcing what staff already knows, or it will just automatically happen, that's fine. When it comes to what the neighborhood really, the character of the neighborhood, which is what I heard a lot of in the testimony, I mean, that's very important. These people have made a big commitment, and I understand the whole uncertainty of not knowing what it is that's going to be put adjacent to your property. You don't want your property lowered in value by what the next person does. But frankly, none of us ever has that option to determine what our neighbor is going to do with their property. And even if it stays D10, they can still do something that lowers my property value or increases my property value, for that matter. I spoke with the adjacent property owner's daughter, correspondent, I should say, and asked the question, if you had to choose between light commercial or D18, oh, I forgot to say that affordable housing or even housing in our community is a high priority for us. It's on our top 10. And we have a willing developer who will help us with this density problem that we have, this this lack of housing that we have, if that's what we choose. My personal preference is for D18 because it meets the assembly's goal. But I asked Ms. Wild, if the neighbors had to choose, would they rather have D18 there with condos, or would they rather have light commercial where it's only used by and large weekdays and evenings and weekends? It's vacant. It could be overflow parking for the church as well. It seems to me that light commercial is the better use for the community, for the benefit of this neighborhood. Therefore, I will support the motion as it is on the floor.
Thank you. Any other? Ms. Becker.
Thank you. The only reason I'm going to make this motion is so that we have both of them to vote for. So based on that, I move that the last line of that ordinance say, currently zoned D10 to D18.
Mr. Mayor.
Okay, the amendment is before us.
Oh, never mind.
The amendment is before us to change the last line of the ordinance, zone D10 to D18. Correct, Ms. Becker?
Yes, it is.
Discussion on the amendment?
Objection.
Call the roll, will you please?
On the amendment to rezone the property to D18.
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Crane?
No.
Ms. Danner?
No.
Mr. Dipto?
No.
Mr. Freer?
No.
Mr. Menzies?
No.
Mr. Sanford?
No.
Mr. Stone?
No.
Mayor Botello?
No.
Motion fails.
All right. The ordinance is before us, and it is to currently change to keep it as it is. Excuse me. Ms. Danner's motion is to keep the ordinance currently zoned D10 to light commercial. Any other discussions?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Dibdahl, go ahead. Then Mr. Freer.
Yeah. First of all, I want to say, the comprehensive plan, as far as I'm concerned, has always been a guidance document, and many people, and it gets referred to too often as if it was cast in stone, brought down from Mount Sinai or wherever. But the reality is, it is a guiding document. I think the neighbors make some compelling arguments, but it's probably based on the fact that most of the time it's because when it's not known what's going to happen, they're not, concerned, and they should be. And it's also why I tell people that, hey, you should not only be concerned about your own neighborhood, but you should be concerned when the comprehensive plan comes up for review all over the borough, because you don't know if you're going to be living in this part of the borough or that part of the borough. And so, it's important to stay abreast of those things. But I do think that the light commercial provides the greatest opportunity to address some problems of safety and things that can be fixed in the area relative to the traffic and to the safety. And that I think that people don't really understand sometimes that if you go with a greater number of units, whether it be D10 or D18, 18, that you might be buying into a lot more problems and probably not have the ability to fix some of the ones that exist already. So I would support the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Debell. Any other comments? Mr. Freer?
I'd like to speak against the motion. It's not that I can't imagine a commercial use on this property at some time, and sometime perhaps there will be a commercial use on this property. But residents, wherever they live in the borough, rely to some extent on the designations in the comprehensive plan. And this plan recently underwent, in 2008, the revision was approved. It underwent substantial public review, and through that process, this parcel was determined to be suitable in the future for medium-density residential use. And that's what, to the extent that we want reliability and predictability in a document such as the comprehensive plan, I believe that it's provided it for this parcel. And I feel uncomfortable sitting here and looking at a more intensive designation for the property, or one that is at variance with the designation in the comp plan. I found both the staff report and the Planning Commission decision to be factually based and sufficiently analyzed. And I feel more comfortable. I realize that we have this cart and horse question. If we actually had a proposal to look at, it might be different. We might look at a very good proposal for the site, but we don't have that. And that, to me, brings in a measure of uncertainty and unpredictability, which I'm just not comfortable with. In reviewing the table of permissible uses in the zoning code, there is a progression that occurs from D10 through D15 through D18. These are side by side, if you will, in the gradient of intensity that occurs between these zones, and it builds up. Something that may not be allowed in the D10 can become a use by right approved within the department in the light commercial zone if it's considered a minor development, an office, say, under 10,000 square feet. That doesn't even go to the Planning Commission as a minor development in a light commercial zone. So it's not clear that every idea that would be proposed for this lot would be a conditional use or would necessarily go to the Commission for additional review. It's impossible to say what if it would be one or the other, but there are uses in the light commercial zone that are uses of, for example, offices greater than 2,500 square feet are used by right, approved administratively. As a minor development, that means a building 10,000 square feet or smaller. So, and that can't happen even in the D18 zone, for example. So there is this gradient, if you will, that goes up with the intensity of uses from, as you progress through the zones. All of us who have lived in town for a while can look at areas, and particularly around the airport area, where we've seen transition occur between residential and commercial areas, where the concrete plant used to be was heavily residential or was more industrial in years past and has become more residential. The area that's zoned for office use on O'Day Drive, there's many of these sort of transitional areas in the valley. This may be one at some point in time, but I'd be more comfortable if that were reflected in our guiding document, such as the comprehensive plan, and not a decision that we make here without having that sort of strong basis behind us. So I will vote against the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Freer. Ms. Banner?
I'd like to respond to Mr. Freer just briefly, and maybe it's a question also for Mr. Pernula, which is, it seems to me that the comprehensive plan it does cover this in that it says medium density residential allows for light commercial when it's compatible with residential use. So while and my question, I think, for Mr. Pernula is when I asked earlier what's allowable, under light commercial, he gave me a long list. But maybe light commercial that is compatible with residential, what does that list look like? How do you define compatible with residential?
Mr. Pernula.
That's not something that I can just pull it out of a hat and say this is what's compatible with residential. You know, that's why we have the Planning Commission. We have boards that take a look at those kinds of things. Each of those other zones, D18, D15, D10, allow some commercial uses as well, such as offices, not the retail, but other commercial uses. And depending on where you're at, those may be the commercial uses that you would deem appropriate in a residential neighborhood, perhaps not retail. I don't know.
So if we change this to light commercial, it's no longer MDR and no longer has that restriction of being having a requirement to be compatible with the neighborhood. This is why I asked the question earlier, if we left it at a lower density, D10, leave it as it is, if we leave it at D10, then we still have the comprehensive plan that says it's MDR. But once we change it to light commercial, we no longer have the protection of MDR. Is that correct?
Mr. Pernula.
Once you change it to light commercial, anything that's permitted in the light commercial zone, you can get a permit for. You can get a permit either through the conditional use permit process or across-the-counter building permit.
Then why is there this provision that says you can do light commercial development in MDR if it's compatible with residential?
Well, I think that's a general statement of the general guideline of the plan, and perhaps the general statement is not necessarily talking about those uses in the light commercial zone, but those that are permitted in D18, D15, or D10, because there are some low-intensity commercial uses that are permitted there.
Mr. Freer.
For example, Mr. Chairman,
home
occupations are allowed in all residential zones. I believe they're also allowed in the lowest density residential zones under certain restrictions where you can be an Amway dealer out of your home or something like that. In my mind, that represents the sort of commercial use that would be deemed compatible in a residential zone, but not, and this is just me talking, this is not something that's written down necessarily, but by way of example or to illustrate, that would be more likely what's meant by a use compatible in the residential zone, but not a gas station or something even less intensive, a yarn shop or something like that. At least that's how I would view it.
All right. Any other comments, questions? We're ready for the vote. And we are voting on the, not the amendment, but the original motion. And we will keep the ordinance as it is written in your packet. Ms. Sika, call the roll.
Ms. Danner?
Yes.
Mr. Dipto?
Yes.
Mr. Freer?
No.
Mr. Menzies?
No.
Mr. Sanford?
Yes.
Mr. Stone?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Crane?
No.
Mayor Botello?
No.
Motion carries 5-4.
All right. We will take a 5-minute break and come back at 8:35.
You're listening to K2 News.
in Juneau, Alaska. Tonight, increasing clouds, patchy fog late, lows around 49. Tuesday, mostly cloudy, patchy fog in the morning, slight chance of showers in the morning. Highs 62 and lows in the high 40s. And for the rest of the week, mostly cloudy, chance of showers, highs in the low 60s and lows in the high 40s. You have been listening to K2's broadcast of the CBJ assembly meeting, and they are currently on a 5-minute break, and we will join them when they go back into session.
In my blood, anxious to get away, determined to do good. Then I got a break, start singing with a band. We got to earn some bread and get the folks a hand back home. Maybe Sally wouldn't have to quit school after all. I hope I can do it. Boy, don't say what you don't mean. See, everything is black and white, there ain't no in between. Grandpa didn't know it all, yet he taught me well. Had never been grandpa, boy, I really called him. You know what I mean? Well, I can see him now. Grandpa, this is for you.
Johan and Bruce are both back on.
Okay, thank you, Madam Clerk.
I don't like these contentious vibes.
It did happen. I served on the plan.
It happens,
research it to see if there was a way to live.
What do you think about that?
Between now and then.
Let the voters decide.
Ms. Danner?
You give it a reason.
Let's go.
No, they didn't.
Let's go.
I just did not like that at all.
All right, I'll call the assembly meeting back to order. Mr. Dibdahl, Mayor, are you there?
I am.
Thank you.
I'm here.
Thank you, Mr. Dibdahl. And we'll move on to our next ordinance, Ordinance 2011-11F, Madam Clerk.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $2 million as additional funding for the Juneau International Airport Runway Safety Area Capital Improvement Project, funding provided by the Federal Aviation Administration.
Mr. Swope.
This ordinance would appropriate $2 million to the runway safety area construction project. Funding would come from a Federal Aviation Administration Airport Improvement Program grant. Alaska Department of Transportation and airport funds received through royalty payments from the FAA for fill material provided by the airport to this project would be used as matching funds. The airport board approved this action at its March 9th meeting. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Any questions for the manager? Public participation. Does anybody from the public wish to speak on this ordinance? Seeing none, Mr. Stone.
Well, I personally think that the acting mayor should be introducing, should be making this motion, but I will do it on his behalf.
Thank you, Mr. Stone.
So I would move Ordinance 2011-11F and ask for unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? So ordered. We'll move on to Ordinance 2011-11G. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $250,000 as funding for the Juneau Mendenhall Valley Street Dust Sweeper, funding provided by the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Mr. Swope.
This is a very modern 8-cubic-yard self-propelled vacuum street sweeper that can only be used in the Mendenhall Valley for those streets, and it can only be used there because funding for this was acquired through a federal government congestion mitigation air quality program that's then transferred through the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities to us. And the funds that we purchased this for are to be used to reduce or improve air quality in federally designated non-attainment areas, of which the Mendenhall Valley is one. So it's a long explanation. It's a big, fancy, nice street sleeper. Really glad we have it. It can only be used in the Mendenhall Valley. I recommend the ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Swope. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to comment on this ordinance? Seeing none, we'll move forward to assembly action. Mr. Freer.
I would move for the adoption of ordinance serial number 2011-11G and ask unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? So ordered. There's no unfinished business. Mr. Swope, right?
None, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. We'll move forward to new business. Madam Clerk, would you read the first item on the new business?
This is the initiative petition that was submitted to the clerk's office. It's before you in the packet is a draft ordinance 2011-19, an ordinance amending the revenue and taxation code by adding a tax of 15 cents per bag on all plastic shopping bags provided by certain retailers at the point of sale.
Mr. Swope.
The city and borough charter provides that when an initiative petition has been determined to have sufficient signatures, which this has, the clerk immediately shall submit it to the assembly. And if the assembly chooses not to adopt a proposed initiative without any change in substance to what was brought forward in the petition, it shall be placed on the ballot. So basically, it gives the charter gives the assembly the opportunity to adopt an ordinance for which the initiative has been certified. If you want to go ahead and do that, thus avoid the entire voting process and cost associated with that. I think that's the intent here, if you're comfortable with that. So the assembly may now introduce the ordinance. They can decline to introduce the ordinance. You can refer it to committee, table it, take no action. The charter allows you 45 days in which to take some action on this or non-action. And I think according to the clerk's ballot preparation deadlines, any action beyond August 22nd would result in this measure having to appear on the October 2012 ballot. That's to say, if tonight you're not going to take any action, your recommendation is move it forward to the ballot. It'll be on this October's ballot. If you decide to deal with it, then it could delay when this might go before the voters. Again, as this is a policy matter, I have no recommendation.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Mayor, go ahead.
I will be recommending orders of the day. And I want to take a moment just to explain. There is only one action that will avoid this initiative from eventually appearing on the ballot, either this October or next October, and that would be for us to adopt an ordinance substantially similar in nature, which is what we have in our packet. There have been indications that editorial suggesting that we should refer it to committee. We could table it. Any of those actions will not in any way allow evasion of the matter, the initiative, from eventually appearing on a ballot to be decided by the voters. I think we should not interfere with that opportunity. We've all received emails and I suspect calls that, arguing in opposition to it. I think that explains why it would be inadvisable for us ourselves to forego the initiative process by attempting to adopt the ordinance or the initiative by ordinance itself. So long and short, I would have us, by going orders of the day, fail to act. It's an affirmative step, however, so that the matter will be before the voters in October, and the initiative promoters will be in a position to argue their case to the public, and the public will be able to decide.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Dibdahl, go ahead.
Yes, I concur with the mayor's analysis, And does it require a motion for orders of the day?
Simply request, and I've made that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We have before us orders of the day for this ordinance. Is there any objections? Seeing none, orders of the day have been called. And that, again, then we'll direct staff to put that, get it through and into the... under the ballot initiative. Okay. Unfinished business. Staff reports?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Assembly reports. We'll go down the line of committees. Mr. Stone?
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I have nothing to report. I've been off for a month, so I've been sort of missing meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. It's good to have you back. Mr. Freer, you don't have a committee yet, do you?
Nothing to report at this time.
thank you. Mr. Freer. Ms. Danner?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Human Resources Committee met immediately preceding today's assembly meeting. At that meeting, we considered board applications, and the Human Resources Committee would like to forward the name of Brad Hoyt to... for service on the Americans with Disabilities Act Committee for a term expiring August 30th, 2014.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you. The Human Resources Committee also considered an opening for the Juno Commission on Sustainability, and the name of, we are forwarding the name of Greg McEwen for a term expiring June 30, 2013.
Are there any objections? So order.
We also considered an opening for the Youth Activities Board and are forwarding the name of Rick Trostel for a term expiring August 31st, 2012.
Are there any objections? So ordered.
And finally, the Assembly is required to make nominations to the Alaska State Emergency Response Commission for openings on the Local Emergency Planning Committee. The two seats for law enforcement need to be redesignated. And so for seat two, we recommend the Assembly nominate Captain Ed Mercer for seat two and Lieutenant Troy Wilson for seat 2A, both expiring December 1st, 2014.
Are there any objections to those recommendations? Hearing none, so ordered.
And that's all.
Thank you, Ms. Danner. We'll move on to the Lands Committee. Ms. Becker?
Okay. Lands issue was handled tonight. School board issue was put on to for public hearing for next meeting. And the last committee meets in September. We are not having a meeting this month.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Becker. Mr. Menzies, anything?
Nothing to report. Like Mr. Stone, I also was out of town for a long time.
Ms. Crane?
Nothing this evening.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to liaison reports. Ms. Crane?
Nothing.
Mr. Menzies, you have nothing. Ms. Becker?
I gave those, okay. I think, in the wrong time. But
that's okay.
Sorry.
Ms. Danner?
LEPC, that is the Local Emergency Preparedness Committee, meets this Wednesday at Bartlett at noon, and the public is welcome.
Thank you, Ms. Danner. Mr. Freer, I assume you have nothing?
I have not liaised with my committees to this point, and I have nothing to report.
All right. Mr. Stone, you've been gone?
I've been gone. Sorry, Ms.
Thank you very much. I don't think we have any reports of presiding. Mr. Dibdahl, do you have
nothing? Nothing to report, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Mayor?
I will be attending the AML Board of Directors meeting in Sitka, as well as the Conference of Mayors this week, heading there tomorrow.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We'll move on to Assembly comments and questions. Ms. Crane?
Nothing.
Mr. Menzies?
Nothing, sir.
Ms. Becker?
Just a comment that the United Way Day of Caring is going to be October 5th, and I know that the staff here at the CBJ is very good about working, and so that's for the public. Anybody who wants to do some good projects, would be very nice to have that happen.
Thank you, Ms. Becker. Ms. Danner?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I attended the Planning Commission meeting last month, and at that meeting, the telecommunications ordinance, the draft telecommunications ordinance, was brought up. The Planning Commission was confused on direction that it received from this body. If you will recall, there was an appeal of a tower permit application some 2 years ago, and in the Assembly's decision on that particular appeal, it said that if the Planning Commission determined that telecommunications ordinance was in order, we would provide for whatever resources they needed in order to undertake that task. Sometime later, I believe it was within the last 6 months, before the Committee of the Whole, I made note that no consultant had yet been hired to provide the technical information that's necessary for the Planning Commission to proceed. At that point, I actually made a very clumsy motion asking this body to require the city manager to hire a consultant for a telecommunications that would represent the city's interests. And this body rightly voted that down. That's been taken to mean that this body does not want the city manager to hire a consultant to help the Planning Commission determine the best course of action with regard to telecommunications issues for our community. They're currently facing a dilemma of sorts in that we have two new telecommunications companies coming to town. According to Heather Marlowe of the Lands, they will be in need of 12 towers each, and we have no ordinance, and we have no provisions. Right now, the contract for the tower to be put on city property, which is a good thing, at Fish Creek, is for a particular height and a particular square footage of land, and there is no guidance for what that lease is worth. So we have to rely on the other party, the party we're negotiating with, to recommend a good price. And they're recommending $500 a month for lease payments for that project. I think that is a very good price for them. I know of an individual who has a tower on his property that is less than half the height and a footprint that is less than 25% of the footprint, and he receives $1,000 a month plus 15% of any additional appurtenances that are added to that particular lease. We cannot rely on our negotiating parties to recommend the best course of action. The Community Development Department, nor the Lands Department, nor the Planning Commission has the technical expertise or the ability to know what is required and what is best for our community. And therefore, I believe it is important for us to make clear our direction to the city manager for the benefit of the Community Development Department and the Planning Commission with regards to this issue. I believe that our direction is that it is the city manager's decision when to and when not to hire outside consultants. I would like this body to make that clarification and pass that on to the Planning Commission.
And so, Ms. Danner, why do you think that we don't have either the expertise or the expertise within the city and borough of Juneau to assess a hunk of property, and they're going to put a tower on it and put a small building on it, maybe an enclosure of some sort? Why do you think that we don't have that expertise here in Juneau at all?
I'm sorry that Mr. Pernula is not here in the room. That was his quote precisely. It's in the minutes from the Planning Commission's last meeting. They do not have the expertise. They do not know how to do it, and they don't know how to go forward.
I understand staff may not have that, but do we have the expertise here? In fact, I'll ask Mr. Swope if I could change the direction here a little bit. Mr. Swope, do we have the expertise within the city and borough? Establishment, not within the borough employees necessarily, but within Juneau, to give us an estimated cost or rental or some type of agreement. I'm sure we have law firms that would like to do that, or assessors.
Actually, we went, if you will recall, Lands Committee, of which you participate. It was actually through Lands Committee when Ms. Marlowe realized we would have a number of these coming before us. Did authorize her to go ahead and retain a consultant, and it was one of the consultants that you had identified earlier in your dealings with this that you felt was competent and capable and had experience. They have been retained, and they have provided a report to us. So we did retain a consultant, they're putting together a report for us that speaks to valuation. It speaks to putting together a comprehensive plan for these sorts of things.
That's great news. Thank you very much. That's exactly what we needed to hear. Thank you.
Just for clarification, too, I'd like to go back because I know this was something that was questionable. And at least in my mind, I thought it was clear that the Assembly said no. And then it came back up for reconsideration because you wanted clarification on that. And again, the Assembly said no. They didn't authorize me the authority to go ahead and hire a consultant a number of years ago or whenever it came up initially. I guess it wasn't 2 years ago. Maybe it was 6 months, you said. So
I have a follow-up question.
Ms. Danner.
So if you think that 6 months ago this body told you you could not hire a consultant, then why have you done that?
Because the issue came to the Lands Committee that we now were going to have a number of these applications coming forward. The Lands Committee discussed it. I'm getting nods from the committee members and said we think this would be appropriate action for you to take. Ms. Marlowe said we can take that. We can fund it through the Lands Committee fund. And we went ahead and did that.
That's all I have.
Thank you, Ms. Danner. Who was next? Mr. Prayer?
No comments, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Stone.
I have no comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. I'll give you the gavel so I can discuss a couple issues that I wish to discuss.
Oh, I love to have the gavel.
Be in charge, Mr. Stone.
Carry on.
Can I have the floor?
Yes, you have.
Thank you. A couple months ago, we received a letter from the Northland Street Neighborhood Association, and they're wondering why, after 5 years of being on the CIP list for their street to get redone, they haven't had any action on it yet. So before I leave the Assembly, I was going to put a motion before the body to direct staff to find the planning and design money of completed street projects that we have every year, to find that money and start up that work this winter. So
you've heard the motion. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Swope.
And Mr. Mayor, just to follow up, actually, we had that conversation with Mr. Watt, and we plan to do that exactly. We're going to wait till this fall, and some of these projects are wrapped up, so then we know where we stand in terms of any additional monies that may be left over. And that was our plan, is to scrape together enough money to at least this year get the planning work done for that, and hopefully we can have enough money then next year. I mean, we can put it in our CIP to fund it to go ahead and at least get it paved. Mm-hmm. So we're planning to do that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schultz. And then the last issue that I have tonight is another cleanup issue before I not pass on but leave. Tonga's Futures Roundtable. We passed a resolution a number of years ago on the Tonga's Futures Roundtable, and it had all kinds of whereases and where be it's and the resolution is not up to date now, and we supported the Tonga's Futures Roundtable as a carte blanche. And I was one who voted yes on that resolution, but seeing as they've changed direction, and it's changed direction a great deal, I would move that the Assembly direct staff to have the Law Department look at the Tonga's Futures Roundtable resolution and bring it back to us in a format that doesn't give our carte blanche approval to all the things that they do. If they wish to come before us and ask for approval on some topic, that's fine with me, but I can't sit here as an Assembly member any longer and let this move forward in a different direction than what we thought it was going to be. So I would make a motion that we direct staff to do whatever it takes to drop that resolution.
You've heard the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Ms. Crane?
Well, I'm now confused. I thought you wanted the resolution brought back for some review, but you want to drop the resolution?
Yes.
I don't know enough about it to say yay or nay at this point. I would need more information to vote yay or nay. If it's to bring it back to the Assembly to give us that information, that I can vote yes for. If it's to just drop the resolution, which I'm not that familiar with, then I can't vote for it.
Thank you, Ms. Green. And what will happen, I presume, is the manager will direct the law department who has looked at the resolution and bring it back to us in a format that says that we're dropping our support of the Congress Futures Roundtable, and then we'll have the opportunity to vote on it.
Mm. Does that satisfy you, Ms.
Yes, Green? It does. Thank you.
Any further discussion?
So is there a motion before us then?
There is a motion.
Which is? Can you clarify the motion again?
The motion is for staff to look at the Congress Futures Roundtable resolution and to reword it so that we drop our support of the Tongass Futures Roundtable, and that will come back to us as the reworked resolution, and then we'll vote on it.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I'm probably a little too tired here. I may have a conflict of interest because I currently am designated the moderator for the Tongass Futures Roundtable. I've gotten to that position in my mayoral role, but I'd ask the attorney for a ruling, or I'd ask the chair for a ruling, and perhaps a consultation with the attorney.
I guess I would look to our city attorney.
Mr. Mayor, if I could, Mr. Mayor, you're not a part of the Tongass Futures Roundtable as being the mayor, are you?
Not as the mayor, except that I am identified as the mayor of Juneau in virtually all the listings of people who have affiliations.
I guess I would say that you're appointed to that board by being a private citizen, not representing the city and borough. And I understand your point there. Thank you.
Is there anything for any advice from the law department?
I am not familiar with this roundtable at all.
Mr. Chairman, I think perhaps the better act than maybe just to recuse myself.
I guess this is going to come back before us, so I don't see this as a final decision, if my understanding is correct on the motion.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be simpler to bring back the resolution and then we decide our participation, non-participation right at that time?
My understanding is that the deputy mayor has suggested that he suggested language change that staff would produce for us for our consideration, and they would come back before us for discussion and deliberation.
Okay.
Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Filling in.
Whatever I am?
Yeah.
If there's no objection or further discussion, then so order. I turn the gavel back.
Thank you. Are there anything for the good of the order?
Mr. Chairman, are you still on comments and questions?
Yes, Mr. Dibdahl, I think I left you out, didn't I?
One comment and one question. And my comment is that I guess the Monday, the deadline for filing for Assembly, and I encourage all those people who have been thinking about it to go ahead and submit their names. There's no magic about it. And it's a rewarding service, especially when every once in a while you're on the, or every once in a while you can count to five. So I would encourage anyone that's thinking about it to go ahead and file for Assembly. My one question is that I'm wondering when we can, when we will be able to weigh in on the issue of the Fisherman's Memorial, when that might be coming up.
Mr. Swole?
Boy, I don't know if I can give you an exact time. I know there's been a number of discussions, and I've seen information come back to us through, I think it was Mr. Wyrock, as well as Docks and Harbors, but I think they've settled in on a location they would prefer, which is adjacent to the Marine Park there, and it seems like all the parties are in agreement that's where it should be located. So I don't know that there's an issue there anymore in terms of where we locate it. I don't know at what point we can expect a proposed design to come forward.
Mr. Dibdahl, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I racing down this river and crashing over the waterfall. Mm-hmm. Will we actually have a time where the assembly can weigh in on whether or not it should be moved at all?
I don't think that we're in that decision-making process, Mr. Dibdahl, unless there begins to be a fight between the different departments of where the Memorial Committee wants to move to.
Well, if that's the case, then I'd at least like to say that I think the fact that they've married up the issue of moving and the blessing of the fleet, I would have liked to have seen some discussion on that. The cost of moving it, of course, is an issue, but tying them together and I would have liked to hear from all those people who have people on that memorial, and I don't believe most of them support moving it at all, so I was hoping that there would be some time that the assembly would be able to weigh in and become a part of the decision process.
Mr. Dibdahl, how about if we direct the city manager to find out about this issue and have either staff or somebody here at our next meeting to follow up on that for us?
I would like that very much.
Thank you, Mr. Dibdahl. We will do that. Ms. Tanner.
I could address that a little as well. As Docks and Harbors liaison, there's been a great deal of discussion with regard to the Fisherman's Memorial, and most recently a interdepartmental meeting between engineering, Parks and Rec, Docks and Harbors, and I think one other department, which I can't imagine who that would be, and members of the Memorial Committee. So it would be good to have a report back from that report, from that meeting, to find out exactly where we are.
We'll get it. Anybody else down here? Mr. Freer?
Mr. Mayor, or Mr. Vice Mayor, I guess, more accurately, before we adjourn tonight, I would just like to give notice of reconsideration on Ordinance 2011-18.
And you want to hear it at the next regular assembly meeting?
Whenever it can be conveniently scheduled.
Thank you.
What ordinance was that?
The rezone.
Okay.
Fair given notice of reconsideration. All right. Mr. Mayor, any comments from you before I leave?
I have none. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Did I miss anybody on their comments here? All right. We're adjourned. Thank you.
And that concludes the CBJ Assembly meeting. You're listening to KTOO FM in Juneau, Alaska.